caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Good evening and welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program from the beautiful hills above Monterey Bay. I'm Roy Avila and I will be your host and moderator for this evening's program, which will be a unique program for the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. We're going to look back and we're going to talk about some things in the present. And we're going to look forward. I would say call your friends or email them if you're listening to us on your computer and let them know this is the kind of program, in my opinion, that should be in the high schools, in the universities, and teaching people what's really going on, what can be done about it, and how it's going to affect. And it is affecting every aspect of our lives. So hold on tight. We have three of the people who are on the forefront of the freedom movement. We will have Bev Ekman, who writes regularly on News with Views, Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center, and our own Michael Shaw, one of the founding members of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, and I am looking very much forward to listening as well as participating in this discussion. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing great.
Michael, are you there?
I am, Roy. Oh, it's nice to be here.
This technology, a wonderful thing. Bev, are you with us? Not Bev yet. That's okay. We'll work on that part of the technology. First, let's start out by talking about America's choice.
Well, Tom, I'll let you start with that.
Okay. The DVD, the video that we produced, the full name is America's Choice, Liberty or Sustainable Development. And we produced that last year.
It's been 2 years now, I think.
It actually has been, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's all been one big long year to me.
Oh, yeah.
But the point of it was to explain in detail to the average American what sustainable development is, why it is a danger to us, and what to do about it. And, of course, Michael Shaw and myself and Bev Ekman are on it, along with Michael Kaufman and Michael Chapman. And it covers all the aspects. One of the things we really wanted to help people understand is that sustainable development isn't just a land use program. It is a all-encompassing, every aspect of our lives, the education system, the development of our communities, even our health care.
Ouch. Hello? Please stand by. We are experiencing technical difficulties. talk about the technology. Sometimes it's very good, and then sometimes it bites you. We were talking with Tom DeWeese and Michael Shaw about America's choice, liberty, or sustainable development. Gentlemen, you still with me?
I am here, Roy.
Ah, good. Tom, or Michael, what was the mindset and the circumstances that were the genesis of America's choice?
Well, there is so little understanding of what it is. I was explaining earlier, I mean, so many people think it's just land use programs. And so we needed to tell people, we needed to create a tool that sustainable development is.
Trophy just for playing the game. Yeah, we're setting the bar really low. It's a school day in the USA. It's about this new age. We gotta turn the game. Give them a real education. About history, about the republic or democracy. The earth is dying, that's a got the magic indoctrination. Please don't all the way to the interrogation. We'd like to learn some more about yourself and your family. Bodies joining up with a gangland, sociopaths going out with a bang. They won't need a Bill of Rights or a Constitution. They're being set up just to be knocked down. Classrooms full of convicts and clowns. Here's what your money brought you, so the revolution. Things aren't what they seem. It's the American nightmare. The end of the dream. Kids are being prepared for a world of masters and slaves. It's not about education.
Welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. I hope you enjoyed our musical interlude there as we continue to work out the technological bugs that occasionally bite us. Anyway, we've been joined, I hope, by Bev Ekman, regular contributor to News with Views, and we are going to pick up our discussion with Tom DeWeese and Michael Shaw. We're talking about America's Choice, Liberty or Sustainable Development, which was the DVD that was produced a couple of years ago. And, you know, we're talking about the genesis and kind of what was going on at the time that led to the development of this product. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, well, as I said, there's so many people who don't understand the issue, and we needed to create a tool so they could use it. We had a lot of activists calling us, what can I do? How can I get this message out? And so we created the DVD that has five presentations on it, each about an hour long, covering every aspect of the sustainable development issue, so that people could take it into their local clubs and use it as programming. They could get it on television, on local cable access, and that sort of thing. And that's exactly what has happened with it. We are probably approaching maybe 6,000 or so that are out now. It could be more than that. I may not have my finger on exactly how many to put out, but They are all over the country. They're in the hands of activists who are using them in just those ways. And the DVD covers, as I said, every aspect of sustainable development. It talks about smart growth and the Wildlands Project and how these land grabs are operated and why. It brings in the education issue and what's happening to your children in the classroom to basically indoctrinate them to accept the principles of sustainable development. And what Beverly does is she talks about the, one of the major ways that the Sustainable Development Program is implemented is through the use of consensus meetings, where a trained facilitator stands in front of the meeting and directs people to begin to think a lot of these ideas were their own, even though they weren't. And this is the way these things are being implemented. People don't even realize that, that it's being done to them. And Beverly has created an incredible program on how to bust these meetings up and take control of them and not allow that preordained consensus to be put into place. And so she has that presentation on the DVD as well. So it's very encompassing to anybody who watches it will come away really with a good understanding of what sustainable development is and what to do about it.
But when you were convened at, I forgot the location where you all were met, was the idea to create a DVD, or what was going on that brought you all together?
Yeah, it was in the home of a lady named Mary Alice Davis up in Maine, just above Portland, Maine. And we were there for two reasons. One, we set out to make the DVD. That was the purpose of our being there. We had the cameras ready. We had everything ready to go to record it. But we were also there because Mary Alice Davis is a victim of a lot of these programs. And we wanted to create an event that would draw attention to it and help her in her fight. And we call it, you know, her, Mary Alice Davis is her name, and we called it the Summit at Camp Davis. It's kind of a play on words. It was just fun. But that was, you know, those were the two reasons that we were doing it.
Well, whatever happened to her?
Lost the house.
Wow.
She lost the battle. She now lives in Arizona, where she had another home, but a beautiful mansion that she and her husband built on 100 acres of land, and the community used every trick in the book to keep her from using her land. She was trying to create a small, high-scale development on a piece of her land, and they literally refused to bring water and sewer to her property. They made every regulation they could to keep her from selling a home. They got to the point that every time she sold a lot, it cost her money instead of her making a profit off of it. They literally drove her into a severe financial situation, and she lost the home to creditors. And what was interesting about it was as soon as she lost the home and the person who bought it at auction moved in, and they practically threw her out on the street, the new owner actually was able to immediately get a permit to put a landing strip on the property.
Wow.
where Mary Alice couldn't even get legitimate housing lots approved there. It was just amazing what they did to her.
And someone who might just happen upon this broadcast might think, you know, maybe that's just kind of an isolated incident.
Mm.
But it isn't the case.
It's not isolated. It happens all over the country. I think probably the battle over the eminent domain issue, which was brought to the forefront last June in the Supreme Court's Kelo versus New London, Connecticut, brought it to Americans across the country who finally saw that the Supreme Court had made a decision in that case that said that local communities could use eminent domain to take anybody's property for any reason, always under the guise of the common good. But if the community decides that they can make more tax dollars or better use of the property than you are making of it, then they throw you off and use eminent domain to do it. I think that case was the first time, at least since I've been working on property rights issues, that property rights made the front pages. That people from across the country suddenly realized that this massive effort to restructure our country into top-down control, which is sustainable development, this was the power of it, and this was the danger of it, and that got a lot of the people's attention.
What has changed and what's happened over the last few years?
Well, a lot of things have happened. Again, the eminent domain issue has taken the forefront because this has gotten so prevalent in every single community of the country that almost every local government is using these tactics to take land and control development and so forth. So that awareness is beginning to grow. I think that's the one thing that we've accomplished here with the DVD and with our other efforts, what Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is doing, what the American Policy Center is doing, where we are bringing out an awareness where most people either didn't know what it was or had a positive feeling about sustainable development that, it's just the way the community comes together and has a visioning for the future, and isn't that all a wonderful warm hug and just wonderful for our community. Now there is debate, there is doubt, and there is a lot of negative view of sustainable development because we're beginning to show more and more victims of it as the Kelo case brought so clearly to the forefront.
Bev, give us your view on, you know, where we've come and what else is going on since the America's Choice DVD was put together.
Well, first I have to say I could not hear Tom DeWeese very well. I hope the audience could. And I hear you fine, but I'm not hearing Tom very well. What has happened in the culture, as I believe Tom said, is that the government has inserted itself, and it's a top-down sort of thing. It's not just local governments. It really comes through the federal government, but it pretends to be, so to speak, coming through local governments. I remember when all this sex education stuff started and the phony baloney testing programs that don't really test academics but are testing, actually doing psychological profiling, were starting in the 80s. They tried to tell parents who complained that it was a local initiative, and many parents believed them until they found, or their attorneys found, the federal dollars behind them sneaking into the back door. And this is how the things that Tom DeWeese described is also playing out in property rights and other things, is that it's a federal insertion coming through state and local clones, so to speak, of itself. For instance, the U.S. Department of Education, they give money to the State Department of Education in every state, and then that translates also into the local education agency, and there's always a local education agency, and its personnel, its staff, its budget all depends on carrying out the directives of the federal government. So that's how basically you find the money. You have to be looking and thinking that way in order to find the money in the first place. And we've seen, of course, in schools the pornographized sex education and sex culture being really shoved down the throats of the students and their parents, whether they want it or not, to the point where, you know, children are given homosexual literature to read. Any parents who object simply is told in no uncertain terms that they're flexible, dogmatic, and this and that. You're seeing parents forced to drug their children for behavioral conduct problems, which, let's face it, all kids, I mean, a part of growing up is behavioral problems. It's what they do. And all of a sudden, we're drugging them. Well, this is really coming through the federal government when you look back far enough at all the directives and the money. We've seen the psychologizing, I've coined that term, the psychologizing of education, in that we're not transmitting academics much like the song goes. We're psychologizing it instead.
Mm-hmm. Michael, you say that Santa Cruz is kind of the songbird in the mind, if you will. Talk about that.
Well, Santa Cruz has been for a long time vested in a globalist perspective on how the community ought to be run. If you trace down sustainable development, it is a globalist program. It's sponsored by the United Nations and,
yeah,
and all of its working organizations, from the World Trade Organization to the World Health Organization, etc. And it is designed to really supplant national governments. Now, someone might say, well, gee, so
hang
that's
on,
really
hang on just a second, Mike. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
All right.
We're back on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program, and we're talking about America's choice, liberty or sustainable development. And our guests this evening are Bev Ekman, a regular writer on News with Views, Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center, and Michael Shaw from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Continue, please, Michael.
Well, what we find is that the internationalists are the ones who promote sustainable development, and yet, ironically, we find that it's our federal government that is promoting it. You know, sustainable development at its core undoes national governments and creates a world government that swallows up all the principles that America was predicated upon and that a growing and improving world depends upon, and creates a one-world system of government that does not apply the principles that Americans have grown accustomed to. And so it begins by stripping our economy through the program called Sustainable Development. It moves into our schools, and it shatters the ideals of America for our own young people. And it plans within a generation to create this one-world government with a much lower standard of living here in the United States, and with the elimination of private property. And, of course, that's where the battle has to be fought. And that's where the American people have to stand up and say no to sustainable development, whether it's coming from the federal government or coming from local agents working on a globalist program.
Tom, talk about some of the things that you're currently working on.
Well, we are working very hard on trying to get some legislation through Congress after the Kelo decision was made back in June. Congress rushed to get some legislation in, the Property Rights Protection Act, in the both the House and the Senate, to...
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program, and we were talking with Tom DeWeese about some of the current activities of himself and the American Policy Center. Tom, go ahead, please.
Well, as I said, the House of Representatives passed the Property Rights Protection Act pretty quickly this past summer, last year, in 2005, so my age. And
like you said, it's one big long year. Yeah.
And then it moved on to the Senate. And a very interesting thing is taking place there. Senator Aaron Spector, the great freedom fighter of all time, I use that tongue-in-cheek, is running a very interesting ploy here. He is holding up any movement of that bill in his committee, the Property Rights Protection Act, which what it would do, it would cut off federal funds to any community that uses eminent domain for community development. I mean, this would, and let me make this very clear. The government needs the use of eminent domain to implement sustainable development. They need that. And if we cut off their ability to use eminent domain, we slow down, at least, their ability to implement sustainable development. So they need to keep this in place. And our inspector is working with the National Mayors Conference and the National League of Cities, who are very much opposed to the Property Rights Protection Act or any kind of effort that takes away their ability to use eminent domain in the community. And they have been lobbying hard on Capitol Hill to stop this legislation from going through, and Arlen Specter is linked arm-in-arm with them to hold up this legislation, give them the time to do their lobbying. And the fact of the matter is, if this bill isn't passed by the end of this legislative session, then it'll have to be started over again, and the chances of passing it then will be much less than now. Arlen Specter knows it, the National League of Cities know it, and they're doing everything they can to kill it. So what we're trying to do is build pressure on Arlen Specter to get this bill through his committee and get it to a floor vote and let the Congress vote on it.
Well, those are some exciting prospects. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. We're back on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. Tom, when you mentioned the League of Cities, you mentioned the Conference of Mayors. Talk a bit about how those organizations and organizations like that fit into the puzzle.
Well, every mayor in the country is a member of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And pretty much every city are members of the National League of Cities. These are bodies. They aren't elected bodies. They're clubs. But they are places where the ideals, the ideas of sustainable development, a lot of these other ideas that seem so crazy to a lot of us, suddenly appear. You know, you're going along in your community and everything's just fine, and all of a sudden a new proposal comes up. You think, where does this come from? Well, where it comes from are organizations like this, the U.S. Conference of, or the National Governors Association is another one. The lobbyists for these things, the people who perpetrate these programs, get on the podium at these national conferences and make these presentations, and they say, here's the latest legislation that's been coming, it's going to come down, and here's some model legislation you can use in your own community, and here's the pros and the cons, and here's your argument. And they just feed this stuff to all these unsuspecting, unaware elected officials who then say, oh, well, this is just the new thing that's coming along. And then as soon as the thing is introduced in the state legislature or in the city council, they think, oh, yeah, that's a thing we learned about at the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And that's how it operates. They are able to put the stuff into the pipeline through these organizations. And the U.S. Conference of Mayors is one of the largest promoters of sustainable development in this country. If you go to their website, sustainable development is one of the main things that you will see that they are pushing for. And they were arm-in-arm with last year in San Francisco, the United Nations held an international meeting in San Francisco, World Environment Day, and its target audience was the mayors of the world, and in particular because of the United States, the mayors of this country. And here they were given a couple of documents to sign. One was called the Green Cities Declaration, and what this was a promise to implement sustainable development programs, a certain number of them, in a short period of time. And these were programs that were included cutting back on water.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
We're back on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program right now. Tom DeWeese is talking about how organizations such as the National Conference of Mayors get together to, in their own way, predetermine policy. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. They predetermine it. They spread the poison to everybody. And, of course, they use peer pressure to get other mayors or other governors or other city council people to go along with it. I mean, you know, how can you sit there and oppose such a thing when everybody's for it? You know, that's the argument. And so there's a lot of peer pressure with that.
Where does the funding for these kind of organizations come from?
Communities pay dues into these organizations is one of the main sources.
So you and I are paying for those.
Yeah, of course you are. Always. It always comes from your pocket. And they become very, very powerful lobbying organizations, and then that's exactly what they're doing now. They do not want to lose the power of eminent domain for community development, which you know, that sounds, well, community development, of course, that's what they're there for. Well, no, it's not. Community development means that anybody, and, you know, you get a powerful councilman, you get a mayor, you get somebody who's got some influence in the community, and he has locked arms with a local developer or some other entity, and they've decided that they can make a bundle of money by tearing down your house and building a hotel there, or a shopping mall, or a brand new high-rise, and so that's what they do. And there's no stopping them. They've got the power to do it, no matter what the argument. You say, it's my property. Oh, too bad.
Santa Cruz, Tom, to prove that point, our most recent draft of the upcoming general plan, we have 145 properties that are, quote, underutilized, meaning that there are homes on them, but the lots are seen as having greater potential by the planners, and so it's being zoned that way. In other words, people's home use is being determined to be non-conforming, so that they can make no further improvements to their home, and in fact, all they can do is sit around and wait for the government's vulture buddy to come in and take their home and develop it into some sort of multi-residential government-controlled housing development. And that's on over 140 properties here in Santa Cruz, and we're just a small little county, but that's the kind of thing that this whole sustainable program is designed to do, is to put people in government housing where you have to live by government's rules, which get tougher all the time, and people who own their own homes, their own suburban homes particularly, will be increasingly squeezed out through economic or land use programs.
Here's the incredible thing, Michael, on the Kelo case. To this day, New London, Connecticut has no plans for the land, all those homes that they are taking out or want to take out. There's no plan for it. It's just put it aside in case they need it someday. It's an amazing thing.
It is an amazing thing. You know, in Kelo, though, Tom, we can look at it and say, well, it's a close vote. It was 5-4. There's four guys who are genuine Americans on the Supreme Court who are defending private property and the people's determination and use of their private property. And yet, what I think is forgotten generally in the Kelo conversation is that 3 weeks before Kelo was a decision out of Hawaii called Lingle, that's the governor of Hawaii, versus Chevron, a real defender of private property. Chevron was in the position of saving for all of us the idea of private property. And lo and behold, it was a unanimous court case that that held that Chevron's private property in this circumstance could be taken by the government, by their competitors, etc., and that there was no due process requirement in connection with Fifth Amendment takings cases. Now, that's a grandiose idea. Basically, it says the local government can do whatever they want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's no protection for the citizen by way of the Constitution.
Sandra Day O'Connor gets a lot of credit on the Kelo thing for being on the minority, and she said a lot of good things, but she's also been one of the chief advocates of using international... Thank you.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. On tonight's program, we're speaking with Bev Eckman, Tom DeWeese, and Michael Shaw. And just a second ago, Tom, you were talking about Sandra Day O'Connor on the one level kind of playing a good role for the people, but, you know, on the other hand, really undermining the people at the same time.
Well, yeah, she's two-faced on it. She, you know, in the Kelo case...
Okay, we're going to give this another, you know, we're pushing the envelope tonight, and so...
Is it me?
I'm not sure if it's the speakerphones, or if there's a radio on in the background, or a computer with speakers on, but, you know, we'll keep having at it.
I put my hearing aid on. I don't know if that's... I was trying to augment with my... hearing aid, and I hope that didn't get in the way, but I've taken it out.
Well, hey, you know, this is live radio, and that's really one of the beautiful things about it. It's real, it happens, and that's just how it is. The point that I wanted to get out of all of you and any of you, and Tom really got me into this, was, you know, there's this whole game that's run on the public.
Yeah.
By whether it's Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, you know, they're running this game while the real deals are getting done behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's true.
Talk a bit about that, Beth.
Well, that's been very, very true in education because it's a top-down, as I said, deal. And, you know, really there's only seven things that can go wrong in learning, per se. And they've got the public completely hoodwinked with all this learning disability nonsense. And, you know, it's strange how we didn't have all of that in the 50s and 40s and even 30s. In fact, there's a case, and I can't remember the exact name of it, I'll have to go back and look, but somebody very important, it was in Alabama, no less, a judge in Alabama, that wrote that his African-American students were learning to read better and faster than his white students, and he couldn't figure it out. And, of course, in those days, they didn't spend a lot of time doing so because it might be one-room classroom, you know, and they had all grades. But in any case, all of a sudden now that phonics is no longer taught particularly, they've taken the sound element out, which was very helpful to African Americans, thrown that in the sewer, and now it's not only just the opposite, but
the whole language can kill the whole generation of people, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, some things that can go wrong with learning, per se, they're not actual disabilities, they're just, I guess you'd say, weaknesses, but to learn anything, I don't care what it is, you have to have visual and auditory memory, visual identification, spatial reasoning, conceptualization, in other words, the ability to conceptualize, hand-eye coordination, and thought expression synchronization, which I can explain in a minute. That's it. I mean, how many educators do you know who are specializing in one of those?
Not many.
You don't find hardly any, because... at high-priced learning centers, they're learning because they train their staff to establish the substructure of learning first. I mean, if a child thinks one-fourth is bigger than one-half because four is bigger than two, then he's got an abstract reasoning problem, you know? I mean, that's it. And what he'll try to memorize his way through math, like I did, and by fifth grade, he'll crash. And he'll certainly never get tax issues or the kinds of issues that Tom DeWeese was talking about because of it. But if a teacher starts off training this student to conceptualize and to his spatial reasoning and his abstract memory, and you can do that in every subject area, if she does that consistently with that child, if that is what she specializes in because of her training, and that child is put in that kind of a classroom with a teacher for a couple of years, guess what? He won't have that problem anymore. I mean, that's it. That'll be it. So, and the same is for the others. But we're not doing that. We could fix education in a minute.
But you got me going here, because I'm a dad. Well, because we're spending all this time
talking
about diversity and acceptance.
Oh, yeah, and recycling. And
exactly.
And which is nonsense in itself. I mean, we're spending more energy trying to recycle than we would if we just threw it out. I mean, but all these top-down things are driven by activist organizations, leftist activists mainly, but other kinds of activists.
Talk about them. We talked a minute ago with Tom about the League of Cities and the mayors. Who in the education, what are some of the organizations that are involved in manipulating the educational system?
Well, there's a long, long list of them. In my book, there's the Kettering Foundation. There's the Carnegie Foundation for Advancement of Teaching. There's the Rockefeller Foundation. There's all of your environmental foundations, because that fits in with what Tom DeWeese was talking about directly. But and there's another, I mean, I have in my book, Cloning of the American Mind, a list, and it lists them, which ones are doing most of the funding. And they also do, therefore, most of the lobbying. And they have access, therefore, to most of the legislators. And I don't care if it's state or federal. And anybody that goes against that, well, money will be spent. I mean, these guys trade money back and forth. For example, I got hold of a list of grants for a particular case I was working on from the Carnegie Foundation for Advancement of Teaching. And I was looking for something very specific, and I happened to cross-reference that, luckily, with the Humanist Foundation, the American I can't remember the exact name of it now, but the Humanist Associations. And I looked down the list, and I found that they were trading money back and forth various years. If one didn't have enough say to fund a sex education type program or one of these phony baloney testing programs, then the other one would fill in the gap that year. They have so much money they could never spend it all. That's what I'm getting at. While a bunch of moms and pops, we don't have a lobby.
Right.
And so, because we're not organized in that fashion, and we should have in the 70s seen the handwriting on the wall, and instead of going to the golf club or turning on the television, we should have really gotten together and started seeing what was coming down. And we didn't. And now we're paying the price. And so these other organizations are funding each other, and I know what it was. Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies. That was the name of the organization that traded money back and forth with the Carnegie Foundation that year. But there are other humanist associations, too. That's just happened to be the one that year that I was looking for. But it's a constant thing, and they have so much money between all of them that they can do a deal under the table to trade money back and forth that they need for a particular thing that they're pushing for, this homosexual advocacy and stuff in the classroom, and all these clubs that are now. There's more than 3,000 homosexual clubs in high school. I mean, the term homosexuality shouldn't even be broached in high school, in my view. I mean, what is the point of that? I didn't have it, you didn't have it, and we didn't need it. Nobody needs to really know about something that is that off the wall and that controversial at that young an age. I mean, we just don't need it.
and we talk about some of those clubs. Some of those clubs not only are functioning, but they rule. I mean, they get.
It's in your face 24/7 for the poor kid, and he's got to deal with this. And so, and then the parent has to deal with it because the kid has to deal with it. So, you know, and then how much educating is getting done then? Of course, you know, their hormones are raging at that age. They have issues of development and so physical development that they don't quite understand. I mean, every kid is a little uncomfortable with all that. And yet here is being rammed down his throat all this stuff, which of course it becomes all consuming. By the end of it all, I mean, it takes up nearly the whole thought process of the day. And if he isn't getting that, then it's recycling, and it's some other diversity or multiculturalism or something that is tearing down America, and they don't know anything about math, they don't learn anything about our tax structure, they don't learn anything they really need to know to sustain a republic such as ours, a republican form of government. They don't have it. They think it's a pure democracy, for one thing. They don't even know the difference. Mm. And so what's happening is that these organizations, these foundations, these tax-exempt organizations, I might add, they have found a niche in America, and which is what the left discovered that it could do, and it could do it tax-free. And that's why so many of them came over here, because, hey, look, this is really neat. We can do all this stuff and insert ourselves into everything we want to insert ourselves into. So basically that's what's happened with our schools, but it's certainly gone into every other form of endeavors in the sustainable development. And these decisions, like the Kelo versus New London decision in Connecticut that Tom DeWeese is talking about, there's pressure being applied to our legislators and even to our Supreme Court judges and their clerks. So let's not forget their clerks, because they influence the Supreme Court justices immensely. In fact, the clerks are partly responsible in any case for what gets read by the Supreme Court, what gets heard and what doesn't get heard. So there's a lot of stuff before it ever comes out in the paper, before the Supreme Court justices ever actually hear the case and it becomes reported in the paper. So, you know, something, say, allowing or disallowing behavioral therapies in the school, which is what a lot of these programs are. If a parent sued, or a group of parents sued, saying that doesn't belong in the school and that isn't the right of the school, I know for a fact there's two Supreme Court judges who would love to hear a case like that. But, you know, it's not likely to come, because clerks who are trained, you know, in law school, and the ABA is very liberal, and so forth and so on, by the time it all came down, that case would never, ever have a hearing.
Michael, talk about how let's take the global look now and talk about how other organizations like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and all those really all tie together with all of the different kind of organizations that we've been talking about.
Well, I'll attempt to do that. I'll start by saying that sustainable development, and maybe Bev and I disagree on this, but sustainable development is not a left-wing driven concept.
Yep, that's true. That's true.
You know, you got as many on the right wing as you do on the left wing. In fact, I tend to think the left-wing supporters of sustainable development, some of them are just, you know, double entendre clever fellows, but most left-wingers who support these concepts are doing it somewhat foolishly. The right-wingers who are doing it are contemplating their own private gain, because there certainly is money to be made as the sustainable drive around this world and in our country begins to drive out private interests and accumulate power and economic concentrations in the hands of very few. And that's where we see the major corporations around the world lapping on increasingly to sustainable development concepts. And they do that for two reasons. One is some of them are opportunistic, and others simply say, huh, we can't stand up against this, so we're going to join them rather than fight them. And so it is the global corporate element that used to identify largely as American no longer does. It's the world economy they focus on. And they don't mind taking Americans and shoving us down in order to equalize the world, taking us down to lower levels. And the way they do that is by eliminating private property. And the organizations you talk about do that on a globalist basis. International Monetary Fund and the World Bank combine the principles of sustainable development in a way to argue the creation of economic benefits while eliminating all non-central elements of private ownership. In other words, if you're a major corporation, you can have your private interests. But if you're an individual, you can be rolled out of your house so that other people can come in and take the place. And I don't care if you're sick. I don't care if you have some other reason why staying in that house is more important to you than just receiving the money value of your home. But what's happening across America is that the concept of sustainable development is taking over all things, both local, national, and always predicated on an international theme. And that theme is the destruction of private property, the elimination of individuality, and the concentration of certain acceptable norms in human thought to the exclusion of all of other ideas. And of course, that's a process that hasn't played itself out yet. But we're establishing, right under our nose, the institutions necessary to do just that.
And this is something that's gone on for a long time.
Well, sure, it has. For a very long time. I mean, there's always been the tyrants out there. But it's been the last 30 or 40 years where they've been able to manage a certain control that would not have been thought possible before. You know, today, we call what we used to call fascism, we call public-private partnership.
Yeah,
that's quite a softening of the terms. I mean, it's the same economic idea, but it's sold now as something positive. And for a very long time, that would have been an anathema to the American people. Today, we hear public-private partnership, and most people just kind of hum along in their cars thinking nothing of it without realizing that what it means is that the day of their individuality is numbered.
Michael, go ahead.
If I may, on that subject, I had a congressman say to me, a Republican congressman, said, isn't public-private partnerships bringing the price of...
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. Pick up on your thought, Tom.
I'm getting a complex here.
Well, you know, who knows what's going on?
I don't know.
But we're going to get this message out one way or the other because, you know what? Y'all have worked so hard for all these years. We're not going to let anything stop us.
Yeah. Well, what I was saying was that this particular congressman, this Republican congressman, we were talking about the evils of public-private partnerships. We were trying to explain this to him. And he said, well, isn't that the Republican way that we bring in the private sector, and he was looking at it as a way that we keep the size of government down by letting business do what it does best, and so forth. Completely misunderstanding the concept that that sustainable development is, and I think that's a lot of the problem we have. We've got some very evil people in Congress who are driving a lot of this agenda, but you've also got some just very ignorant or misinformed or completely out of the loop members of Congress that are trying to do the right thing, but are led by the nose every day by those evil guys, and that's the tragedy of it.
And when there's that much money involved, that being led is a relatively easy thing for many of them to do.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I have a lot of people, I get calls and emails every day about what can we do and why are we losing these battles and so forth. And you know what's astounding? 2 million illegal aliens went to the streets across this country in 60 different cities, and Congress went, whoa, look at that. When was, you know, we've got people in this country losing their property every day, and nobody marches in the streets. You know, we barely get people to make phone calls to Capitol Hill to complain about it, and then they want to know why they're losing their property. You know, Congress only understands one thing, sledgehammers to the head. The second thing they understand is money in the pocket, but that you've got to hit them in the head and then say, you know, this is wrong, and then they'll react on it, but... we aren't doing that. People are just accepting the sustainable development, accepting these restrictions on their lives, seeing them thrown out of their homes, and we go, oh, well, gee, and that's the way it is, and we go on. So there's why we're losing the battle, because we're not responding to it.
I would like to add here, too, that I agree with Tom that... sustainable development, the property right thing in particular, is not just a left system.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. Hopefully we will have a non-technical eventful second hour as we continue our discussion with Bev Ekman, a regular contributor at News with Views, Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center, and Michael Shaw from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Right before we got a little crazy there again, Tom, you were making what I think is a very important point. You know, on immigration, 1 million supposed people hit the streets. You know, I might say something about those numbers, but that's another subject. Continue on that line of thought.
I think Bev was making a point, too. My point was simply that people are losing their homes, and your home is... you know, the most important thing in your life, except for members of your family, and people are being thrown out of them. They're being restricted. They're not allowed to do things to their homes. You got homeowners associations, which are nothing but Nazi villas. All these things are happening, and we just seem to accept that. And we wonder why Capitol Hill isn't paying attention. The most ignored movement on Capitol Hill is the property rights movement. And, you know, when we go in, to talk to members of Congress, they both basically say to us, well, you know, you guys are going to oppose what we want to do on principle anyway. That's an exact quote from a congressman from last week, or from a staff members. And it's like, well, we can't negotiate with you people. We're just not going to talk to you. And we are looked at as just nuts because we believe that you have the right to own and control your own property, and that's a constitutional, a God-given right. It's your right. And they don't recognize that. How can we put this legislation together so that we can get this program done? That's what we care about.
Go ahead, and if you would, repeat what you were saying.
I didn't hear Tom at that time when I was saying that. But I wanted to say that when I made the comment that a lot of it is leftist in education, it is, but for his purposes and the way he's talking about, he's absolutely correct in saying the right has done, the so-called conservatives have done their bit on the sustainable development. But what did happen is that the left kind of learned how to work the system, and I think the right learned their own lessons for their own private benefit from how to work the system. So we've kind of gotten into this thing that because of really, I'd say, 40 years of miseducation, many people on the right as well as the on the left, that, you know, on social issues, when it comes to their own self-interest, they have learned that working the system is more important than anything else, and so that they work it like the left learned to work it. And you know, this has been a situation that's developed over a 40-year period, as I said. And it hasn't been anything that's been just recent. And we have been turning out people who find principle not to be particularly important, acting out of principle. That has been an acting. In fact, I heard a TV program just the other day. It was they were reviewing a movie or something. You know, it wasn't anything important. But they said, well, remember when honor was important and going on like that. And they didn't realize what they said. They were talking about some old movie and how good it was. And it was one of the things that it highlighted is the days when honor was important. And I don't think they realized the importance of what they just said. And that, you know, acting out of principle is out of fashion.
And when it comes to money, power, and control, they're all at the trough. Michael,
yep.
Talk a bit about the whole... Let me just throw this out, and whoever wants to respond. You know, here we are all working for the God-given fundamental rights that are ours. You know, but then you get, immigration, gas prices, you know, you get all these issues of the day that, again, to me seem like just stuff to keep us occupied.
Yes.
While
yes.
All the other real deals are getting done behind the scenes.
I'm really appreciative that you said that, because that's been one of my themes too in my columns. Is that it's and as a result, the American people are crisis-ed out.
Mm-hmm.
Really, they're exhausted.
They don't know what the real crisis is.
No. They just hear one crisis supposedly after another, and they can't concentrate on anything, and they sit in front of the TV and literally veg out, because even when they're listening to the news, not to mention all the programs, but the news, because they can't. They find themselves immobilized. They are immobilized by all of these things that you are mentioning, and then they feel helpless. And when they feel helpless, they do nothing.
Michael, talk about the techniques
of dumbing down the American people.
Of dumbing down the American people and manipulation by crisis.
Well, they've become expert at that, clearly. We've had a
period of 20 years where the borders to this country have been completely open.
Oh yeah.
For those seeking economic opportunity or those seeking mischief to enter this country. And today we're so far down that line that any discussion serves the globalist interests. To stand up and say no to immigration results in a national ID card. They've got this dynamic played out so thoroughly that they're going to pick up points from the table. They're going to take away freedoms by virtue of the immigration discussion, no matter what happens. So while, there's an important position to take in vis-a-vis immigration, it's a position that, because it's been ignored for so long by the majority of people, that I don't care what we do today, we're going to suffer losses to our liberty and to our system of government that is fading in many other ways as time passes. So immigration is an important issue for some people to deal with, but I see it as an issue that is a born loser at this point. We're going to end up with something ugly out of the immigration dynamic, no matter what happens, because the globalists, the sustainable developers, have control of that issue, and have had it because they've been working it for 30 years.
And pick an issue where, you know, they have leverage in whether you want to talk about housing, you want to talk about water, you want to talk about health. It appears as though they have a foothold in every issue.
Well, I think they do. But some of them are earlier in the process and easier, therefore, to reverse. And once we reverse them, we can reverse the rest. Water is a good one. The West of the United States has fallen prey to the Sierra Club's dynamic on water, restricting our water use, and preserving the water for the fish, whether they need it or not. When we get down to the bottom of the issue and look at water as firstly a human issue and secondly an animal issue, we can begin to write that course. But that's going to take some doing. It's going to take more suffering by the American people, I'm afraid, because we've become immune to one and then the next crisis that comes about, most of which don't get paid attention to by the media. You know, they'll pay attention to the Holloway case out in the Caribbean rather than to the taking of water from all Western inhabitants.
Well, if we can help Tom DeWeese and his people get the Endangered Species Act repealed, maybe we can make some progress.
Well, repealing the Endangered Species Act would be the beginnings of a reversal of what's been 100 years in play with the globalists, certainly since before the Wilson, or during the Wilson administration, and since. Every administration really has had a globalist flavor to it, whether you're talking Reagan or Roosevelt. If the Endangered Species Act were repealed, the process of reinstating America as a unique experience in world history, one where the individual has a life of their own and where government fits to protect that individual, can be reestablished. We haven't had that in this country for at least two generations and maybe longer. But the next generation is going to find that the slippage that we've allowed to happen for the last two generations is going to cost them forever and very dearly if we don't take steps to reverse it. And that's why the steps taken by American Policy Center and Stewards of the Range are so remarkable and timely when it comes to the whole issue of the Endangered Species Act.
Tom, where are we on this?
Well, the House of Representatives passed the what's called TESRA, the Threatened and Endangered Species Recovery Act. Are we there?
Yeah, here we are. Try again.
Okay. I start hearing a feedback in my ear, and then I know it's going to come.
Yeah.
That's why
I'm getting good at it.
That's why I talk funny when it starts to happen. Congressman Richard Tombo, California, decided this was going to be the year that he was going to change the Endangered Species Act. The language they used was update and strengthen. And several others could not take this language, and I have said quite clearly that I will have no part in anything that will update and strengthen the worst piece of legislation ever passed by the U.S. Congress. And the original bill that he put in was just a horrible piece of trash. Property rights people came together and made a lot of noise about it. They actually were going to add to the Endangered Species Act a thing called the Invasive Species Act, something we've been fighting for 10 years. Invasive species, without getting too technical about it, are anything. Kentucky bluegrass in your front yard, your pear tree, if it didn't belong there originally, your pet dog, all these things are invasive species. And the idea behind that is to keep us out of the forest and to curtail human development. I mean, that's really what it's about. And here was Richard Pombo, the hero of the property rights movement, it's self-proclaimed, that he was going to put this horrible piece of stuff into the Endangered Species Act and say he was going to update and strengthen it. Well, he was going to strengthen it, all right. That would make the ESA the worst piece of, even worse than it is now. And what we wanted was, well, we didn't want the bill at all, frankly, but if we're going to do anything with it, we wanted to have some kind of property rights protections in there. And they put some cursory language in that was watered down in the committee and by all kinds of amendments and everything. Yet he got all kind of publicity about this was the bill that was going to support private property rights and fix the Endangered Species Act. Now the Senate is working on another bill that doesn't even bother to make any kind of reference to private property, and so they're moving on this, hoping to get something passed in the Congress this year, which just literally will do nothing but make things worse. In the meantime, a few of us, the property rights movement has been really divided over this issue, and there have been some divisions made, some gaps that may never heal because of it, because certain people who got behind what Pombo was doing and tried to force-feed this language of update and strengthen down our throats, and we said, no, we're not going to do that. So the property rights movement is kind of all over the place right now. Some are defending what Pombo has done. Some aren't quite sure where to go with it. There are a few of us, stewards of the range from Idaho and the American Land Foundation in Texas and the American Policy Center and very few others, are standing for repeal of the Endangered Species Act, that there can be no other move that can be taken other than repeal of this act. This act has a 99% failure rate of helping endangered species. I mean, that there is no way this bill should go on. This
law, the Endangered Species Act, has simply consolidated property into the hands of the government. It hasn't done a thing for species.
Absolutely.
In fact, it harms species, because the average landowner who's now subjected with a taking of his property because of the Endangered Species Act works to make sure that these rare species don't come to his land, because with them comes a loss of his property. Now, that's no way to have a land use policy formulated in this country.
And they call it shoot, shovel, and shut up. It's a tragedy. Because if you think you're going to help species, and the guy thinks, because this is on my land, I'm going to lose my land, he's going to kill it. That's not going to happen.
Okay, we're back. Let's go on. Maddie, you were going to say something?
I was simply going to say that this kind of thing has happened here in Montgomery County, Maryland, where I live. It's right just barely outside of Washington, D.C. And there's a famous park called Rock Creek Park here. And they've very carefully, the environmentalists have reinserted deer into Rock Creek Park. And, well, over the years, I guess really about 10 years, now there's so many that they're running into the sides of buildings. They're found in downtown Washington, crashing into Starbucks and I don't know what all. And one other thing has happened to them, too. Because there's no natural predators, guess what now is being found all over the county, because this park is very long. It runs through Washington, D.C., up through Montgomery County, Maryland. So it is miles and miles and miles of park, and it is a very beautiful park. But now we have coyotes, and they are stalking people and small pets and stealing them from backyards and all kinds of things, and bears, and, I mean, all kinds of things that the environmentalists never seem to think through anything, and government never seems to think through anything. They get caught up in these political fads and throw lots of money at them, and then, like you were saying, they backfire, and they backfire spectacularly right on the very thing that they were trying to supposedly save or accomplish.
Well, Bev, it just seems to me that when people join in to the elimination of private property, there's no good motivation behind that. It's simply political. It's simply vengeful and jealous. Motivations that draw people to do such things, and that's what all of this political movement behind sustainable development is all about. It's about eliminating private property from ordinary people. It's not about eliminating the private interests of multinational corporations, at least those that go along with the globalist political movement. It's about ending private property for you and for me and for my neighbors and for your neighbors and for all the ordinary people in between.
You know, I'd like to insert something there, if I might. He just hit on something. You know, they're preparing children very young for this so that they will say, this is okay, this is normal. I mean, they now pat them down when they come into school. I'm not just talking metal detectors. I mean pat-downs. So that your private property, your backpack, your what we used to call our book bags, and that surely dates me there, but, you know, all of these things that were in purses, I mean, they start now very young with the idea that, well, you know, if you have nothing to hide, you're not going to mind your personal property being mauled over by the authorities. And this sets you up. This, instead of really attacking terrorism where it is, first, and also just young criminals, they put those back in school. They put them right back in school again instead of taking them out that have committed really bad offenses. But they're instead preparing these kids to accept the notion that private property, you know, is not really all that private, and you really don't deserve it anyway.
Well, and don't they kind of put a little spin like, well, isn't it, you're kind of greedy if you want private property.
They say you're part of the rich.
Right.
Rich.
And we need to, you know, you have too much, and we need to redistribute your wealth.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And by the way, that is exactly the root of sustainable development. It is the root of the Kyoto Accords on global warming. It is the root of all of these international policies, is redistribution of the wealth. And take it away from the United States, put it somewhere else, and that's what this is all about. And when they talk about in all these highfalutin terms of it's for the to protect the environment, it's for endangered species, it's for this, it's for that, it's not that. It's robbery. And these things, we're talking about the U.S. Mayor's Conference and the National League of Cities and what they're doing in these communities, what they're doing in the schools to our children. This is our government acting like Tony Soprano, and these are RICO violations. These people are conspiring to rob us of our wealth, to rob us of our liberty, And that's why RICO laws were invented, to stop racketeers from doing that kind of thing, and that's exactly what they're doing.
And I know we talk all the time, you know, individually in meetings when we talk about doing the show or whatever, but a lot of the... Because the ultra-rich will stay ultra-rich.
Yes.
But
yes.
They're stealing from hard-working families who farmed the soil for 100 years and just have tried to be good Americans.
Yes, they are.
And many of your ultra-rich also are, you know, living off of tax-exempt monies and trusts that have been handed down and traded between the families, you know, cousins and that kind of a thing for many, many years. So it, none of this stuff really affects them that much, although sometimes it does, like somebody that has property that other people want, such as Mary Alice Davis in Maine. If they want that property, they're going to get it by hook or crook.
What you're seeing now, and people have been talking about this a little bit, is a huge division beginning to take place between the rich and the poor. And that comes about when you destroy the middle class. The middle class, where jobs are created, where property is used, and private property is one of the main elements to create businesses, to create the funding that you need to do that, which creates jobs, which creates wealth. And when you destroy the middle class, then you create this huge division between the rich and the poor. And we're seeing more and more and more of that because of these regulations and these policies, like sustainable development. They're designed to do that. You have a strong middle class when you have freedom. And when you start seeing that destroyed, the first thought you better have is something's interfering with freedom. And that's exactly what we're seeing happen now.
You know, as you were speaking, you reminded me of listening to Michael Kaufman talk about, and I think it's a Brazilian guy who studied all of the different societies, if you will, and came down to that property rights is so fundamental to the success of a society. Tom, I don't know if you remember that or Michael, pick up on that and tell people better than I am about how that works.
Can you take that, Michael?
Well, I think he's talking about the DeSoto book.
Yes.
In the description that private property is what leads all societies up toward improvement. And in America, we're seeing private property being attacked constantly, to where even the concept of private property has begun to change. And that is what is provides the real thrust for the attack on the middle class. You know, I might just point out what the UN has said in the development of their sustainable development policies. 1992, Maurice Strong said this at the Rio conference, that current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class, that means Americans, that involve meat intake, fossil fuels, appliances, that means refrigeration, home and work air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable. Now, that's the program upon which the American government is operating. We pay taxes in order to have the government come and make it difficult to live in suburbia.
And I might add, they put that right into the curriculum so that the kids get it. That, in other words, in another form, that exact statement from the UN comes into the curriculum so that the kids absorb it. They don't even know where they got it at the end of the day. And by the time they graduate, it is pretty much internalized in their mind.
Well, you live here in Santa Cruz, and you come out and you see that an average, not that attractive home in this county costs you $650,000, you know, and it's ready to fall apart. And some young person gets out of high school, and they've been told that this is a bad system. And they look out there and they say, "Gee, I got to go out and earn $150,000, $200,000 to buy a starter home in my community."
Right.
I think I'm going to look for a different course in life. and we begin to change this whole psychology of America's youth. And that, of course, is what cements the day for the sustainable developer as they work toward a world without a middle class, with much lower population, and with no private property other than the private property that's owned by the insiders.
And I might add, too, that that increases the probability that kids will turn to things like drug selling and drug running and that kind of a thing, you know, getting into that arena, the illegal type of things, in order to buy these starter homes in these places that their parents could easily have afforded, but somehow seems out of reach to them now. And so when they're looking at alternatives, it's easy to, you know, double dip like the Enron people. You double dip from the company and steal stock, or do the drug selling or something illegal. And that's how they get into that, because suddenly the things that they thought or assumed in their youth would be in reach are out of reach.
Talk about how the sustainable development policies have created the high cost of housing.
Well, I'll start with that. Here in Santa Cruz, which is really a prototype sustainable community all across America, everybody's following us. I mean, it used to be people would laugh at us. Now everybody's following us. So we ought not be laughed at. We ought to be examined. What we see here is that the land upon which one can build is very limited, such that all land that is buildable becomes very expensive. Now, if you get a permit to build anything, you got to be one of the invoys.
First, talk about how the land becomes
limited. Sell your buyers out before you even start, with all kinds of deed restrictions that restrict how it is that you can build and operate the homes that you're building.
But how does the land become so limited?
Well, because here in Santa Cruz, we have greenbelt all around us. The government went out and beat up the landowners that owned all of that greenbelt land and eventually bought it all up. So for the last 20, 30 years, they've done their job, have bought up all the land that surrounds the town, all the land that connects up to the next county in San Mateo, up to Half Moon Bay. All that coastal land is now owned by the government or its buddies. Now, that doesn't mean it'll never be developed. It just means it'll be developed when the government wants to.
And then the private-public partnership comes in and builds affordable housing.
Well, affordable housing that costs three times as much,
yes,
as what a guy like me would charge if I were to build it. It's because it's all laden with incompetency and corruption.
But if
you can look at a builder that's working here in Felton and working here in Aptos, who has a financial statement where the administrative costs are three times the cost of all the homes that they built. All their money comes from government. So we're spending three times as much for these government affordable housing projects, three times as much as we would if we just had, you know, Joe Builder out there building homes, open up the land so that the land wasn't so high, we'd have the homes we need. People would be able to afford it, and America would continue.
But then I'm a first-time home buyer, and I see the prices that are here, and the government's telling me, but that's okay. I have a development here that will subsidize you. And you'll pretend to be the owner.
Well, you know, we've had people at Freedom 21 contacting us, particularly from the Bay Area, up San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland, with these kinds of projects, and it's really painful. They go in, they buy a house, they think they own it, they find out they don't.
Mm-hmm.
The government sets the sale price they can sell it at. The government, sets the rules that they have to live by. The government does everything, and they're still paying a high dollar.
Michael, I don't know if you're aware of this or not. You probably are. A report came out March 27th, a new report entitled How Smart Growth Makes Housing Unaffordable. Seen that?
I have not.
Who talk about that?
It's called the planning penalty. How Smart Growth Makes Housing Unaffordable. It's released by the American Dream Coalition. And it says in this that in more than 50 urban areas, restrictive land use planning increased the cost of a medium home by $100,000 to $850,000 because of restrictive land use planning. In 50 other areas, planning increased medium home cost by $25,000 to $100,000. So it's the land use smart growth programs that are driving up, just as Michael was saying, they restrict the land, making the land much more expensive. But this report says that it's increased the cost of a median home, by $100,000 to $850,000.
Well, and you know, my experience is that this is a lot of people who've gotten involved in these programs in the last 15 years are just starting to find out when they want to move up, which is the American dream, right? You start out, you build up some equity, and then you move up. We're starting to hear more and more people find out that that equity is not theirs.
Well, that's the affordable housing program, you know. You get to buy like you're an owner, and yet you are ruled as though you're a renter. And worse than being a renter, you're a renter from government, which means you're just their chattel.
Wow.
And youngsters who do not understand even the basic concepts of property rights or anything else or what even constitutes a renter versus an owner, they're sitting ducks.
Yeah, they're sitting ducks. You know, America hasn't felt the effect of sustainable development yet. I mean, it's there, it's building every day, reversing it becomes more and more difficult. But when we feel the effects, and they will come like just a giant crab snapping our heads, when those effects come, they're going to be very dramatic.
You know, it leaves me speechless. I mean, because, you know, here we've talked about, you know, every aspect of our lives. You know, we haven't even gotten into, you know, again, I don't think this high price of gasoline is an accident.
No.
You know, get out of your car and take that mass transit and live on that beehive that's right there on the rail line. Or even better than that, you won't even have to go to work because you can just stay in your home and go downstairs and shop or get your little food there and go back up. And you know, that whole live workspace that is becoming so popular.
You know, I after all these years of working on these things, a little cynicism does build into your attitude.
It does.
And I have to say, I found it hysterically funny to read the paper today to see that George Bush was going to roll back environmental regulations because they were driving up the price of gas. Well, duh.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I read that this morning or the other day too.
Yeah. So it's okay then if they have to do it to save their little jobs, then we can throw out these environmental regulations. Obviously, they aren't all that important, are they?
No.
You know, that's what Bush is doing here. You know, what a lot of people don't understand, they're all blaming the oil companies for this. And of course, now Arlen Specter is leading the charge.
Ah, the game he rises.
Here he comes, windfall profits tax. Hey, businesses do not pay taxes. People pay taxes. If they put a windfall profits tax on the oil companies, they're going to raise the price of oil so you pay the tax. That's the fallacy. If they did it before back in the 70s, they want to do it again now. All that is a ploy by these cowardly elected officials who put all these restrictions on so that we can't drill for any more American oil, we can't build any more refineries because of these regulations. But they won't roll that back, although Bush said that's what he's going to do today. But instead, well, we'll tax, because that's what government knows how to do. Tax, rule, and regulate. And that, you know, that's their answer to this. If government would get out of the way, gasoline would still be about 25 cents a gallon, and we'd have plenty of it. But, you know, these guys roll it away from us, and then they have a crisis on their hands, and golly, what's the answer? More government. So, pardon me for being cynical,
oh,
but...
Oh, please. well, you started saying that, I'm going, well, see, he's going to supposedly, you know, take some of the restrictions off as he, on the other hand, tries to get that darn Environmental Species Act done.
Yeah. Well, they're just talking out of both sides of their mouth and catering to this special interest and that special interest and trying to make it all sound like something other than gibberish on the nightly news.
Well, yeah, they want to seem so benevolent on the TV.
Yeah. Well, George Bush is one clueless individual. I'm sorry.
Well, they're all just puppets, you know.
Well, you know, I think there was nothing more, I mean, it's a little bit off the subject, but not much, because George Bush was the one who, I'd say, promoted this thing called the New Freedom Initiative, which is an initiative to screen the entire U.S. population, beginning with school children, for mental health. It's called the New Freedom Initiative. Now, with a name like that, you have to wonder who cooked this up and how George Bush, who purports to be a conservative, ever even agreed to it. I mean, a New Freedom Initiative to basically hold a person's job prospects, young people's job prospects, hostage to their opinions. That's what it's going to boil down to, because you can't, every time you screen for mental health, opinions get in there, and they are deemed either politically correct or not politically correct, but what they're called is indicative or markers of mental illness or mental health. Well, it, you know, any thinking person knows that there really is no blood test, no screening mechanism, no chemical analysis you can do, no x-ray that you can take that will show a mental illness. So you're left with nothing but third-rate, non-hard evidence, soft evidence, anecdotal evidence, which is not really the kind of evidence you need for a medical problem. You can't base it on that sort of evidence. You have to have hard evidence, like a blood test. That's hard evidence. And yet he is calling the New Freedom Initiative, which will be started in schools. In fact, it's already started in schools this year, and it was passed by the House in April 2002. I mean, this is the most horrible piece of legislation next to some of the ones Tom was talking about I've ever heard of.
Well, and they're going younger and younger. They're trying to assess younger.
But they're going to get you. They're going to get these kids on opinion-related things. Big government, of course, is always good, and, you know, affordable, and terms like affordable housing, I mean, they're slogans, if you look at it that way. It's a marketing technique. It's a marketing technique for your opinions.
Sure, like sustainable, everything has to be
that's
sustainable.
That's it. And
affordable housing is nothing but it's a false cry to young people to sign up for it. I mean,
exactly.
When they do, they find out that they didn't buy anything but a long-term lease over which they have really no economic benefits.
Right.
Is that anything like the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary? You know, that it sounds so good. Everything sounds so good. The Clean Water Act. Oh, who doesn't want
clean water? Oh, yeah, who doesn't want clean water? Do you want a dirty water act? I mean, you know. I mean,
and we're, yes, oh, no, I'll sign up. Sure, let's do that.
Well, the other thing, too, we're talking about the oil situation and the price of at the pump. What a lot of people don't realize is that this rise in the prices has come about because of the energy bill passed by Congress last year, which mandated that we use different kinds of fuels. And what am I trying to say? The using the corn and so forth.
Ethanol and
ethanol, and so they're putting those into the pumps, and there's a shortage of it. They don't have enough as usual,
and yet they
have to sell it.
And it drives up the price of making it.
We have filling stations here in the Virginia area that are running out of gasoline and having to shut down in the middle of all this because there's a shortage of the ethanol. And that's one of the things I think that Bush is talking about when he says he's going to roll back environmental regulations, is that they're going to roll back that energy regulation so they can start using gasoline again. But the thing is that if they mix the ethanol into the tanks with the other the regular kind of gasoline, it destroys the tanks. It'll destroy your car.
Yeah, it sounds like Jimmy Carter's back in office. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Well, they look a lot alike.
They
must be laughing at this point. I mean,
it's just, you know, I always laugh because I'd cry if I didn't laugh.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I've trained myself for years not to whack on Republicans.
No.
Pardon me, I didn't. I used to try to play that game. Not anymore. George Bush is a clown. He is an ignorant clown. And, that sounds like I just came from the SDS. I mean, but this guy, every time I see him, he's a buffoon. And every one of these policies, he's dead wrong on. And he just keeps coming with them.
Well, you know, and like I know Michael would say, you know, it doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, whatever.
He's taught me well.
It's all of the same, right, Mike?
That's right. That's right.
Those people who are Republican, that doesn't include me, have to be very disappointed. Tom wrote an article about how the Republican Party is a member of the International Democrat Union, an aid political party organization that's centered between the United States and Great Britain, includes the Conservative Party of Great Britain. And if you were to read the platform of the International Democrat Union, you'd think we were living in Soviet something or other.
That's what I've been saying for a long time. And of course, the left did learn how to really manipulate the system many years ago. And so, you know, the Marxist approaches have been borrowed, shall we say, by other factions now, because we're not living in a principled society in any case.
Well, that's right, and I think we must call those factions out that have adopted Marxist principles. It will include the Democrat Party, my party, and the Republican Party, your party.
Yeah.
We don't have a party in the United States that stands for freedom anymore, at least not a major party.
Well, they're all manipulated, too, by the same factions that we were talking about, but we have to understand the lobbyist mentality and, the special interest groups who really have the money and trade the money back and forth and so on. They're the manipulators, and without that kind of... I mean...
What does it mean?
Okay. What about the libertarians? They always profess to be, you know, constitutionalists.
I've always considered myself to be a libertarian, but the Libertarian Party has just failed. It has never picked up the sustainable development issue and the property rights issue. When you think about the Libertarian Party anymore, what you think about is a party that supports the legalization of drugs and is anti-war. There can be arguments made on both of those things, but there are so many issues today that focus on freedom and threaten freedom. Where are they?
Where are they? Exactly.
I've known people who've tried to run on Libertarian Party slate, and they said, I'm going to talk about taxes, and I'm going to talk about this horrible Social Security problem, and I'm going to talk about things that are economic issues that always were the bedrock of the Libertarian Party, and they've been told, no, you can't run on those things. You have to run on anti-war and pro-drug. And this. What is wrong with these people? You know, they've been taken over. If you had told me back in in the early 70s, when I was an active member of the Libertarian Party, and I actually was an endorsed candidate for the Libertarian Party, if you'd have told me back then that the Libertarian Party could have a socialist wing, I'd have told you you're crazy. But that's exactly what they have, and they've been in power for the last well over 10 years of the Libertarian Party, and they have rendered themselves absolutely useless even in the debate. And it's a shame to see that, because what the Libertarian Party advocates and what it does in elections and so forth has absolutely nothing to do with what I was taught was a libertarian position.
Michael?
Well, I think that's true. There isn't a political party that stands firmly against sustainable development and stands firmly for the individual. And, you know, America's going to have to develop that kind of party in the near term, because the forces of all the parties, major and minor, to bring about this sustainable reinvention of American government is far along at the present time.
They're having a tough time dealing with it. One of the things, private schools, for example, are out of reach now to the upper middle class. I mean, if you've got three or four children, $15,000 a year, $15,000 to $20,000 a year per kid for 12 years, I mean, do the math. Very few parents can afford it. When I was going through private schools, secretaries could afford it. I went to school with the sons and daughters of secretaries many times. I mean, not every single one, but many were. Now that would be simply impossible. So not that the private school is a panacea. I mean, you have to pick and choose, obviously. But the point is that it's much more expensive because of all the regulation. It is very hard to start a private school, and because of all the bureaucratic red tape. And so in the interest of keeping their class size small, that means they don't have as much money to draw from in the first place, and they have to depend on huge gifts from very wealthy people. And they have to also stay out of government, because the minute they accept any government money at all, and that's always available, gee, you don't have enough to
pay the
bathrooms, we'll be happy to give you the money, you know. Then you're cooked.
Right. And two, you know, even in the private schools, you know, we have Michael Chapman, you know, comes on here regularly to talk, you got to pay attention to the
curriculum. Yep.
You know, you got to pay attention to the curriculum. Cause
yep. You can't just send them to a private school to send them to a private school.
Because there's, how many people are involved in textbooks? Not too many.
No. That's exactly right. Now, the teacher can develop her own curriculum many times, and some private schools do, thank goodness. But if you don't pick and choose, if you don't interview them as much as they're interviewing you, you miss the boat.
And you get the same indoctrination.
Exactly.
Most Americans are sitting back today, and you know, they grumble about the cost of living, perhaps, and they grumble about Washington's failure to meet international crises. But beyond that, there's not a whole lot of attention that people pay. And the question for us becomes, well, we're complaining enough about the circumstances it is, but what are we going to do about it? How are we going to help raise the spirit of America back to where it used to be, where we can stand strong and stand tall and stand independently? You know, you go to the schools today and it's all this interdependent relationship that we're supposed to carry on with the nations of the world. And that's what's got to be reversed. It's got to start with moms and dads. It's got to get down to the kids. And somehow we've got to do something with our faltering dollar.
But you know what's happening? I mean, parents are even getting thrown out of the classrooms and schools. I mean, in a public school, for example, and private school certainly, since they're paying for it, they are allowed to be on the campus, technically, I mean, on the campus anytime they want to. But more and more I'm getting reports of the police being called in to throw parents out if they want to sit in on a classroom. They're not doing anything, mind you. They're just sitting there, looking at it, seeing the kids, seeing what they do all day. Well, no, unless you're a volunteer, and even then, you're volunteering for just this tiny little, you know, 2 hours or something, and then you're to get out of there. You don't just peruse the campus, you know, go along and see what's going on all day. You're not, or sit in on your kids' class and see what's going on. That's not allowed. So this is another, in a way, that's a private property thing. I mean, it is in a different sort of a way, but parents don't have any, it proves that parents don't have clout. And what happened to that? I mean, there was a time when you could do that, not that long ago either, 30 years.
Well, let me jump in real quick here to address something that Michael said. I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I was, like many, just, you know, going along what I thought was my merry little way, and then I met Michael Shaw, then I met Tom DeLuise, then I've heard Bev Ekman, then I've heard Michael Chapman, Michael Kaufman, you know, and here I am. And so I have to tell you and the listeners out there, listen, pay attention, go to their websites. It's there. It's right in front of you. It's true. And for you who've been fighting the fight, don't quit, because we need you.
We can't quit. We've tried. Bev and I have had this conversation.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
They just won't let us.
Well, I think there's burnout. There's a burnout factor, I think, for a lot of people that have fought the good fight, that, you know, even people that I've interviewed or talked about in my books and things, that really finally just get to the point where they're so fed up that that they can't, you know, they almost can't see straight. And I think this burnout factor has also happened to parents, as we talked about earlier, just listening to their TV or listening to their radio, and it's crisis after crisis after crisis, and many of which are not real crises, and dodge the real issues to the point where they can't act, and they're just rendered immobile, and they just about say, hey, I'm going to enjoy life and forget all this other stuff.
Well, and for those who are out there enjoying life, your time may be measured.
Yes.
Measured by forces beyond your control, measured by the international forces of sustainable development. And that's why we're all going to have to come eventually to a central meeting point where we take charge of what's happening in this country. We're nowhere near in the position to do that today, but we gotta gather those troops over the near term, or it's simply going to become too late very quickly.
Well, Michael, you talk a lot of times, you know, you can't do everything all at once. Pick what you're most passionate about.
That's right. But you've got to keep in mind today, unlike maybe over any time over the last 200 years, you've got to keep in mind today that America and its ideals are under great threat. The greatest threat comes from inside our own federal government. All three branches of the government are now committed fully to the sustainable development ad nauseum, and we, the people, have got to do something about it. We're not going to do it with the Democrat Party as it operates today, and we're not going to do it with the Republican Party as it operates today. So we've either got to change the parties or come up with a new governing institution aside from those two parties.
Well, we need to find charismatic people, too, within our own camp, and they're there. I mean, they certainly exist, these people, and we've got to support them and really fund them and back them, because entities like the National Education Association, for example, they're going to squelch anybody that says the wrong, gives the wrong answers to their prefabricated questions running for school board. I mean, an activist might start out running for school board, who's very charismatic, who would make maybe a terrific some other kind of official or policymaker in another day and time. But he starts out small, as many people do, as, say, a school board representative. And man, that local NEA, I mean, what they'll call the big NEA, and then they'll filter that down to the local chapters and just give tons of money to that local chapter to defeat that person before they can practically open their mouth.
Well, some of the things that I've seen is, you know, that you find someone like that, and then all of a sudden, you know, the sustainable folks say, oh, you know, we need to bring you into this committee, and we need to you to come to this conference. And before you know it, you know, the ego kind of takes over, and then they say, hey, this is a pretty good life. Maybe I ought to hook up with these people.
You know, that's very true. I thought of that, too. And, you know, some of the really good guys that have been policymakers for a while,
they're not tough like Tom DeWeese. Tom DeWeese is
no.
a tough guy.
But, you know, they get used to being limoed to their place of business, and you know, that's hard to give up.
Tom, we got 30 seconds, last bit for everybody.
We created the DVD, Sustainable Development and Liberty. You can get it at all of our websites. Mine is AmericanPolicy.org, and you got Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, and Bev's, your site
is www.beverlye. That's Beverly with an extra E on it, .com.
So you can get the DVD at any of these. This is a tool we created.
Freedom21SantaCruz.net. So,